Continuing our series of the Bible as the various types of reference books that you can use, I'm trying to think of a way to kind of explain this to you. I remember as a young person either going to the doctor or the dentist, as you're waiting to see him, they usually had little highlights books, something for the kids to do, and one of the things in it is a picture. And you can just look at it. It's usually a backyard scene, but sometimes they're seasonal. But then as you notice, you read the little information or the instructions underneath of it, and it tells you there's other things in the picture than just what you're looking at. So it might be a little boat, it might be a spider, it might be like a spoon or something. And so now you, instead of just looking at the picture, your mind begins to concentrate on one particular picture that's inside of it. And then you find that, and then you go to some other place and you try to find the other picture that's there. Now, there's more, what we're saying, to this picture than just one picture. Interwoven in it are other things to look for. And the Bible is like this. Even as you read it as a whole, you can single out various topics and find those in there. And that's what we've been doing. Yeah, if you took the Bible, not just as a whole, this is Bible study, but you look at it as a science book. You look at it as a teaching manual. You look at it as a psychology reference. All these different things we've been looking at, okay, you can find in the Scriptures. They are independent subjects, but masterfully, they're all woven together into one body of work. It shows the wisdom of God. And those each individual pictures, you know, in themselves are more in detail and more expansive than any work of man that you can run into. Okay. Now, setting up for this morning, we're looking at a theme of God has granted to us everything pertaining to life and godliness. So all we're doing is looking at our lives, the very important aspects of our lives, the department of our lives, whether it's family, whether it's government, whatever. We're just looking at, does God really cover things that will do for us in those various departments? And I hope we're discovering that, yes, he does, even more so than you can ever imagine. For this morning, we're looking at the Bible as a model for society. I don't know if you've ever thought of it that way. Okay? But have you ever stopped to think about what sort of society you would like to live under? Now, it's one thing to be a rebel, and just, want to pull things down, want to destroy, want to graffiti, whatever. But, okay, you don't like the society you're in, you don't like the structure. But now that, if you could get rid of it, what are you going to replace it with? It's not an easy task. In fact, when I was in junior high, this was the very project that one of my teachers gave. I still remember it. Probably the only worthwhile project I ever had. But she came to the student. She goes, and the ones that do the best job will be put in some kind of affair they're having. But she said, basically, here it is, design utopia. Now, it sounds kind of simple to begin with, but what was layered in this thing is, okay, you want a perfect society. Okay. Now, you're going to get interested in a lot of other things if this is your main interest. First of all, you got to find where you want to put it. So now you're starting to do your own research into geography. You're looking at the planet. You're going to see, where's the perfect climate? Where's the perfect land? Is it close to the water? Is it too far out in the middle of things? So you're going to start looking for, the perfect island or whatever it is where you want to build this thing. Okay, now that you've got it, what are you going to do in order to build out? What kind of architecture are you going to use? And keeping in mind, even as you're building it up for the people, are you also preparing for all the refuge that's going to come from it? I mean, even in this town, when you flush the toilet, do you have any idea where it goes? But city planners have to figure this out. I mean, even as you get societies and they're building up, they're also making trash. Okay, and you got to deal with that. Okay? And as you get the people together, what kind of rules and regulations are you going to have for them? Okay? Even as, you know, I thought I clear this one, I'll just have robots, you know, kind of patrol everything. But then, you know, you stop to think about it, you still got to program the robots as to what's right and wrong. Okay? So do you know how to determine what's right and wrong? I mean, the more you get into it, the more you realize how complicated it is to try to put together a society where, especially if everybody's happy with it. One of the things you're going to find out, it ain't that easy. On the one hand, people often talk about having some sort of freedom. Yeah, I mean, you want freedom, you know, kids are, you know, from the parents, I want to be free, all this kind of stuff. Again, children, if your parents went, okay, you're free. There's the door, don't let it hit you on the way out. Now what are you going to do? You're free. Okay. What am I going to eat now? What am I going to wear? Where am I going to live? You know, how am I going to get a job? I don't have an education. Okay. So on the one hand, you want the freedom. You know, find out, on the other hand, people like to have things for free. This is the one thing that used to slaughter me when I was in sales. You know, because I could go and talk to, you know, an owner of a business, and I could have the best product on the market. But, you know, many times they'll go with a guy that'll give them a free, you know, coffee cup or a free baseball cap. You know, and you go, what? It's just the way they work. That's the way they think. Okay. But this is what you have to stop and think about. Both come with a price. Whether you want everything given to you for free or you want your freedom in order to do what you want, it's going to cost you. You're going to have to work for it somewhere. Okay, now, just in the latter case, in order for one to get things without having to work for them, somebody has to pay. Somebody has to pay. I mean, these are the things. Now, these are the things we're struggling with in our society now. In fact, someone said, we're on the brink, you know, where half of our society wants life doled out to them, and the other half wants to work for it. Now, it's one of those things that, you know, as you're looking at it, if you're the one that feels that, you know, things, you know, or you're right and you know, the world owes you a living or whatever, at some point, you know, the ones that work aren't going to be able to do so anymore. Now what are you going to do? When you win, you lose. The farmer, the manufacturer, among others, do not work all day in order to give away the product of their labor. They expect to be paid for it. They expect to make a profit off of it because they got family to take care of. In the former case, to be totally independent and free of rules and regulations, one needs to come up with their own responsibility to look out for themselves. Really, okay? I mean, producing your own food, building your own house, you know, and means of transportation, plus educating yourself, you know, protection. Okay, you've got to do that all. You're gonna have time. You're not gonna have time to sit around and just laze about. Often societies then are a blend of the two, with people giving up some freedom or rights in order to have others take care of some or all of the other things. So, which is the best society? The Bible here also gives us tremendous help with what God intended for the perfect society to be, and it's a major question. And a lot of people overlook what God has to say. In fact, as we look at some of these things, you're going to say, well, I've read that before, but it never dawned on you what it was trying to tell you. And we're going to look at some of the problems with societies that think they can do it better than what God planned. Okay, men's thinking. For centuries, men have tried to devise some sort of society that they consider the ultimate thing in order to bring together under proper rule. Now, in a totalitarian governing is pursued as a way to curb the more undesirable characteristics of man to bring about peace. Now, as we're going to look at some of these, notice the uppermost thinking is man can't do it on their own. They need somebody, and there's always somebody who's got such an arrogant ego that they think they can tell everybody else what needs to be done. But their main thinking is people cannot be left on their own. I think I remember a cartoon of Moses coming down out of the mountain. He's looking over the Israelites and the golden calf, and he goes, these people are not used to, you know, no management. Yeah. So this is the major thing, in that people can't, you know, when left to their own devices, they have a tendency to, you know, just to wander off like sheep. So this is seen, you know, as the background thinking for, through the ages, Plato's Republic, Thomas More's Utopia, Thomas Hobbes' Leviathan, Karl Marx's Communist Manifesto. They all have a way of structuring society to help the sheeple get along. Okay? And people are treated, you know, they're herded like animals. They don't think of it, but you need to take another look at Animal Farm, you know, George Orwell. Now, there's a reason why he uses animals, you know, for the characters. I thought this picture where, you know, you freeze the people into, you know, so they can't do anything, you can build society up around them. The problem with all of these, especially for the Christian, is that the individual exists to serve the state, not God. And in the reshaping and molding of the individual, any dissension must be crushed. You're not allowed to think for yourself. You have to align yourself with the way, you know, the society is geared. Now, at least Plato was honest enough to go, you know, here's my idea of the perfect, you know, the society, but, you know, in the final analysis, he says, it ain't going to work because you're dealing with people. So you've got to get people in order, you know, to do exactly what you tell them to do. Now, this dissension and why a lot of this stuff, you know, preachers rail against, as we get into the various societies, whether it's totalitarian or socialist or whatever, is the decision is most likely to come from the home and or the church. Parents want their kids to be moral. They want them to, you know, especially if they believe in God, they want to train them up morally. And so they're not going to agree with the way the society is going. And this is why in a lot of these different kind of society models, the first thing that's attacked is the home. And we can see it in our society. The Planned Parenthood and the other things, the whole purpose is to get the authority of mom and dad away from the child. And this is why most of them hate homeschooling. Although homeschooling is kind of the normal of most societies. I mean, there's a reason why the Jews were the way they were. I mean, Deuteronomy 6, that's homeschooling. Okay, in our country as it started, everybody was schooled at home. There wasn't any schools, private schools or public schools. Also, the other thing is dissension is the church. There's a reason why they want to get a separation of church and state. They don't want the church to have an influence over the way the state is going. That's not the way our country started out. In fact, look at it another way. Would you be as agreeable if we said there's supposed to be a separation of God and state? Okay, well, I'll show how that's disastrous. Okay. Any society that starts off from the get-go, you know, like Soviet Union, by saying, we're atheists, we don't want God in it, they never last. I mean, we talk about, you know, democracies only lasting usually about 250 years on the average. Communism didn't last 70 years. The reason for it, God wasn't behind it. He's the one, he says, pulls up kings and pulls down nations when they no longer serve him. There's no inalienable rights with certain societies, totalitarian or whatever. One has only what the state gives, and that is at the whim of the despot or the oligarchy. Despot is when one guy rules, king, whatever. Oligarchy is when a group of people think they're better than everybody else and they should rule. Okay? So they're going to determine what's right or wrong and what your rights are. Okay? Our society now, with the Constitution, at least started with, these are God-given inalienable rights. from FDR on in our society, they keep talking about, well, you got a right to this, you got a right to that. You know, they don't say it's a God-given right. They just say, this is the state says what you have a right to. The Israelites under the rule of Pharaoh are an example of this type of despotism. Okay? Pharaoh says, this is it. If you're going to make more bricks, you're going to make more bricks. Okay? Work longer, make more bricks, get paid more. Right, you're slaves. Socialism is primarily an endeavor to meld the two extremes of totalitarianism and anarchy. Okay? People balk at being ruled. I mean, this is why we have revolutions and everything else. But they also find out that, you know, if you got the anarchy, where just everybody is doing their own thing, you know, that's a problem also. You know, once that gets started, compared to our revolution in this country, France went through several revolutions. And it's like, once you get the people started, yeah, they guillotined the royalties. But then when they didn't have any more royalties, they started guillotining the military. When they ran out of the military, they started guillotining themselves. Old Citizen Robespierre, who started all this, was one of the last ones to, you know, go to Madame Guillotine. What they call the government razor. They just didn't know where to stop. No direction. And anarchy is where everyone is doing what they seem best for themselves. This situation is viewed by the elite thinkers as mostly a state of chaos where men serve their own vices. You find examples of this society in the scriptures. Okay, once they moved away from God as early as Genesis, the sixth chapter, every man, you know, the thought of his heart was only evil continually. Every thought was evil continually. Especially, you know, when you get into Judges, you know, I have just, you know, chapter 21 a reference here, but look at all the last part of Judges. I mean, they've got, you know, some guy who, instead of going to Jerusalem to worship, he's got his own little priest. You know, he hires this priest to come in and pays him to make everybody spiritual. You got a breakdown in society. You've got horrendous perversions going on. You've got monstrosities of actions going on. I mean, this one guy's, you know, mad at the way the townspeople, you know, treated his concubine, so he cuts her up and sends her to the various tribes in order to outrage them. I mean, this is not licensing this. Now, people look at these things in the scriptures and go, well, see, this is what God allowed. God didn't allow this. He's showing you what happens when God is not in your life. How bad it can get when men just rule themselves. And Judges, you know, ends it this way. Each did what was right in his own sight. That's not a good thing. Socialism promises then to help protect men from themselves. They are promised certain and often implausible rights if they would only let certain individuals rule over them. So the main problem of socialism is that it is, one, this is be kind, it is naive and it is dishonest. I mean, this is where our country is headed. I'm just giving you a heads up. Naive in the sense that it neither takes into consideration the nature of the governed. Like I said, those other utopias think that men basically are just messed up totally and can't, you know, work on their own. Society basically is naive about the potential of the good in people and what they're capable of doing. Or it's naive in the sense of the nature of the men who will be promoted in positions of power. We have a saying, power corrupts. Absolute power corrupts absolutely. Thus, socialistic societies tend to degenerate into totalitarian societies. I mean, the leaders may start out with good intentions and everything else, you know, give them that. But eventually, as they get more and more power, and this is where our nation is growing to, they don't even listen to the people. I mean, a republic is a consent to be governed. Right now, government is out of control. They do what they want to without the consent of those that are governing. Okay. Now, these kind of arguments have been going on for, you know, since the 1850s. Now, in, they're dishonest in the sense that the rulers promise great things, free houses, medical attention, recreation, whatever, the quality of which will degrade with time as fewer and fewer want to work. Okay, there's a psychology in governance. Okay, let me give you an example where more related to yourself. Students. Okay, say you're in school and you're working hard. I mean, you're even taking AP classes, you're studying till like 3 o'clock in the morning, and you're getting straight A's. And your buddy over here, he's kind of sliming along, you know, he doesn't do the homework, you know, he gets to bed, well, he doesn't get to bed at a good time because he's out partying, you know, but he still does enough in order to get a C. Okay. Now, social society goes, well, we don't want people's feelings hurt or, you know, anything else, and people should be having equality and stuff. And so what we're going to do is we'll give you both B's. Equal out. Now, how long is it going to take you to realize, why should I stay up late at night working, you know, into headaches and everything else, and I'm going to get the same grade as this guy over here that doesn't do anything? After a while, it's going to come down. Why bother? Okay? In fact, it's going to degrade from there. While as, you know, if you're making B's and somebody else is making D's, but you're both, yeah, I'm going to decide I'm getting C's. I mean, you're going to be working less. Everybody's going to be working less, but they're going to be expecting much, you know, more, because, okay, so in our school systems do this. The tests are easier. They grade on curves, and so now everybody gets a B or an A, although they're not doing anything. The problem is, you still got to step out into other societies. The Oriental children don't have that same philosophy. Their school systems aren't the same, nor are those in the schools in India or South America. Now you've got to step into the real world, and they actually know what they're talking about. They can actually do the things. This is why our doctors are beginning to come from India and Asia, and also our engineers and stuff. And all the works and things are beginning to farm out. GM, Government Motors. You know, 70% of the cars made by GM are made by the Chinese. Not American workers. Problem. Things start going down. The quality of education goes down. Okay. Why even go to college if the government's going to take care of you? Okay, the quality of the individual. So socialism doesn't concern the quality of the individual. And since most of us are lazy anyway, yeah, give me a handout. But you see, what we figured out in this country is that entrepreneurialism is the greatest resource a country can have. People out there working, wanting to work, get innovative and all that kind of stuff. When you kill that, and you start making it smaller and smaller, you're killing the goose that laid the golden egg. And eventually, when you've completely eliminated that middle class, where's the money going to come from? When there's nobody making a living, there's nobody producing anything. Okay? So, the wealth is not spread, the poverty is spread. That's the same in a work environment. Now, I've had friends for years that, you know, they work hard as Christians, but the people all around them, especially in a union, the other people, you know, are slacking off or whatever, and the quality of the work goes down. The people don't want to work that much. Why should they? They get the same pay. I hear the same story from the government jobs. You know, if you can't be fired for a bad performance, okay, what difference does it make what kind of performance you do? Just slide through the day, have as many coffee breaks as whatever, you can be fired, and you still make the same money as somebody who's maybe got a work ethic. Okay. And there's other things that are a problem. When I went over to Russia, and they got people that are, you know, in the state-owned things. You know, you go in and try to buy something. Okay? Do you think they jump from behind the counter and go, oh, can I help you? No, they sit behind the counter and they keep reading your book. And when you go and ask them for something, they act as if you're bothering them. And when Russia changed from a socialist type of environment, communist, to a more free market system. Then you go in that same store and somebody goes, can I help you? And there's a nice smile on their face because they know you can go someplace else. So a republic is a type of self-rule where men retain their major rights, take less, and let certain qualified individuals take over limited government by the consent of the governed. Okay, in a republic, men hold themselves to certain standards and thus are free to be industrious, independent, successful, happy, fulfilled, achieving, faithful, unique, debating issues, energetic, exercising will and courage, having ambition, educated, creative, wise, moral. Now, these are the good things that are possible because you let people be themselves. But even a republic, if it doesn't have God, can degenerate. One can be wanting to be successful, achieving, energetic, exercising will, having ambition, you know, but if their whole thing is geared to cheating people, because that's the way they can get ahead, making a profit. Okay. See, there's an element missing from all of this. In fact, you know, each one may be good. You know, a despotism, you know, whatever, might be good if you've got what they call a benevolent dictator. Someone who loves his people, wants the best for them, raises the education or whatever, okay? Fears God. Might be the best thing for them, you know, a people that aren't educated yet or self-disciplined. Okay. Any of them can maybe work, depending on different cylinders, but they can all fold if God's not a part of it. Models for this type of society will be demonstrated in, you know, in the next session. Now, the problem with this is what we just looked at, you know, if there's no proper standard. When a republic is tried without the wisdom of the Almighty, it neither has proper ethical standards nor divine power behind it in support. This is why France went through several republics while we were still on our first. This is why Baron Tocqueville came from France over to see us operating to find out why we were different, why we were working, why we were sustaining, and the rest of Europe wasn't. And the thing he discovered was everybody had a Bible, from the man plowing the field to the senator in the Congress. They were all studying the scriptures. They had a deep faith in God. This is why he went on our money and everything else. Trusted in him. Doesn't have that, even a republic easily morphs into anarchy or a liberal socialism with a trend toward tyranny. So, Old Testament models. Let's get to this before I run out of time. In the book of Genesis, one can see God's original intent for man's happiness. The social engineers are wrong when they say that man cannot live in peace without government, especially big government. Since we are created in the image of God, when we rely on that image to be like God, we can all get along just fine. We can do the work God has appointed us, and we can prosper without harming others. Genesis 1, God created man in his own image, male and female. Genesis 2, then God took man and put him into a garden of Eden to cultivate it and to keep it. What did God do for man? He gave him some land. And there's no qualifications for that. Just cultivate it and keep it. Okay? Realizing everybody's different, you can be as rich as you want to. As much land as you cultivate, if you're willing, able to do that, you can be that prosperous. Or if you just want to do just enough to get by, maybe get into some other pursuits, you can do that also. That's the original intent. We see this borne witness to through the lives of the patriarchs. While others were under the burden of kings, pharaohs, and Abimelechs, Job, Abraham, and Lot were free-ranging. Their cattle, you know, their cattle, their sheep, their everything, their families were growing. Very prosperous. No government whatsoever by men. But note that they were not without guidance of God. either through direct communication, through the patriarch of the family, or through men like Melchizedek, who was a king and a priest, you know, went and consulted and, you know, got him through. Men also relied on the elders of the community for their guidance and judgment. The older men, you know, they had experience. They went to them naturally. Not rebellion against that, all that wisdom that they had. We also see the Israelites were taken from Egyptian bondage. They have God's protection through the wilderness. Their enemies were kept at bay. Their clothes didn't wear out. They were fed daily and a promise of land at the end of it. A land where they had cities they did not, you know, build, cisterns they did not dig, vineyards they did not plant. But notice too, now the question, was all this theirs by right? Did God owe it to them? First of all, we should be aware that they had to fight for it. Got to fight for it. Now there's a psychology there. If you don't fight for something, you have a tendency not to, you know, to value it. Dale Carnegie, one of the richest men in this country, decided, you know, to be a philanthropist, whatever. In fact, most of the libraries probably in this country have been built by him. But he had this insight. He goes, I'll build your libraries, but you got to put the books in them. Okay? When you do that and you've got a part of it, you see the value of it. You see the worth of it. Didn't give it to them for free. Give them a handout, but they still had to do something also. Second, the Israelites were promised more. I mean, they could have gone and expanded the territory of Canaan. I mean, David could have, you know, been king over, you know, probably land twice as large as Israel settled down into. But the people didn't trust God to take it from the 10 spies at first to all the way through it. They settled in and didn't want to put themselves out anymore. Third, these blessings, not necessarily rights, were predicated on obedience to God. I mean, you should go through life as, life doesn't owe you anything. God doesn't owe you anything. Now, he's determined that some things are our rights. But in most cases, you'll be better off if you look at them as blessings and privileges. You do the right thing, and God, as a loving Father, is willing to take care of you in this life. We see that the people eventually rejected God, lost their blessings, and in some cases degenerated into violent and sensual homosexual societies. As to why is explained to Samuel. Part of the reading that Will did this morning, the Lord to Samuel, listen to the voice of the people in regard to all they say to you, for they have not rejected you. They have rejected me from being king over them. You know, to be without government basically is to say, well, yeah, I am under government, God's. As long as he is your king, you don't need another king. You know, look at the context that unfolds. You know, God says, now when they want a king, okay, guys, listen up. This is what's going to happen to you. And he tells them all the ways that the king's going to ride roughshod over them, taking away all, you know, a lot of these rights that God had given them. You're going to take your land. You're going to have to pay a tax. You know, whatever. There's going to be an elite among you. Okay? In Israel, there was no caste system. There was no nobility. Everybody was absolutely equal. When they wanted a king, all that changed. They gave up a little rights at first and eventually all. Even starting into it, God's going, okay, let me pick the kings for you. Okay, Saul, David, Solomon. But after that, they started picking their own and things really went downhill. New Testament model. To look at societal models just in terms of structure is to look at them in two-dimensional perspective. Okay, just to look at, well, this is a structure, you know, as we've been through it. That doesn't really, you know, bring out the essence. We've kind of brought out the essence of the evil they can go into, but there's more to it. Yeah, we'll give an example here. Muhammad Yunus started Grameen Bank as an economics project in 1976. He won the Nobel Peace Prize in 2006 for pioneering an economic system in which small, low-interest loans are extended to people who are unable to obtain a loan from a traditional bank. You know, most banks, you go into them, man, you're going to pay, you know, anywhere from 10% to what we term usury. Your credit card, you know, default on it, 20%. I mean, low sharks sometimes on the street don't get that. But he just said, okay, reasonable amount, small little bit of interest. I can still make money, but what I'm doing is giving you the ability to have a better quality of life. That's what his whole motivation was. Not to be a banker. In fact, this is the way he put it. He believed that business has to give people enriching, rewarding lives, or it's simply not worth doing. He now has over, you know, 2,400 branches, 7.5 million borrowers. And notice the default rate. Major banks have defaults, you know, sometimes 50% or more. His default rate is 2%. I mean, these are poor people who can barely get by, and he understands that. He wants them to get ahead. He's for them, not for himself. Now, this example, you know, I got from a study on the biographies of Richard Branson, the head of, you know, Virgin Airline, you know, Virgin, you know, brand. I don't want to say airlines because the Virgin brand goes on 300 different companies. Okay, the way he does business is totally different than anybody else. In fact, just as a philosophy, is this. This is why he's the one that quoted this. He looks at business as if it doesn't enrich people's lives, if they don't have fun with it, whatever, I'm not going to do it. In fact, he says, you know, not only is the customer always right and should be entertained and encouraged and everything else, the employee has to be treated as well as the customer. They need enriching lives. They need challenges. They need to, you know, put out there. He has made more billion-dollar companies than anybody else. Worth listening to. I'm not sure of his personal habits, you know, I agree with, but you know, what he's getting to this point of, you know, whatever society you're doing, are you enriching people's lives? Not just ruling them. Are you giving them an opportunity to be the best possible person they can be? Physically, spiritually, mentally, you know, have you set up in your little utopia something where that is occurring? Societies also should not just look about structure, but working things so that all the citizens are enriched. God does this. I mean, it may escape your notice. You know, the church is not just some structure, you know, where it's kind of different than other churches and whatever. As a loving parent, he rewards and blesses us when we are obedient. That meaning self-discipline, virtuous, and moral. He expects us to grow up. You need to go from being a child of God to being a man of God. This is what the structure of the scriptures are, and we work with one another, and we do the study so that we do mature to the image and the stature of Christ. We should not look so much as to what our rights are as children of God. They're innumerable. But how we might be better children and better neighbors to enrich all around us, our own family, those we come in contact with, making not only our church society better, but everybody else too. The church now, as God's kingdom, is the perfect model for society. It retains Christ as the head, providing guidance and blessings, while the Christian, in essence, remains self-governing, or again, under the guidance of elders. Some of the main points of God's society are, you know, as we look at this, yeah, keep in mind, okay, this gathering where we are, I mean, sometimes we take it for granted. It's a blessing and a privilege. It's a society. It needs to remain pure as we hold it together. It needs to be really, truly the light on the hill for the rest of societies to see. When we try to make it as much as the rest of the world, we're taking away the hope of humanity. We're taking away the example they need in order to be self-governing, in order to, you know, make their societies better. Notice, in the church, Christ is the head, far above all rule and authority and power and dominion. You can't get rid of that. In fact, why I kind of took you through the different societies that are in the world is because when you start getting away from this pattern, you make the church those other kind of societies. When Christ is no longer the head and you got one person over it, that's not Christ. He's a despot. You know, whether it's the Pope, I mean, what is the Catholic Church? It tried to model itself after the Roman Empire and put the Pope as head instead of Christ. And that's why it's gone downhill. It's a totalitarian society. Now, when you've got other people like a synod or a gathering of supposedly living elders now or whatever, now you've moved into an oligarchy in the church. And it's no longer the model that God has given us. Men are trying to run it and not God. We basically said we don't want Christ as our king anymore. We want to be a king like the rest of the nations. Okay? Well, it's no longer going to be his kingdom then. We've deteriorated the structure and our allegiance to him, for that matter. We are fellow citizens with a responsibility to work together for the sake of each other, to make the whole built up in love. Notice this. This comes out of it. It's a society of not just people that are stiff and, we're coming to church and we're studying the Bible, and this is the way it's supposed to be, da-da-da-da. You just take the whole heart out of it. God says, no. We're supposed to be working this society, so it's different than all others. You know, where those, like the elder, they actually care for the flock, the members care for each other. You know, we build each other up in a sense of love. It should be a society that you want to be in, that you don't feel like you've got to rebel against or, blow up or whatever. But you got to work to keep that. You've got to grow up. You've got to know the law. You know, Hosea said, my people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. Because you haven't learned God's law, you kind of want to, it's like, the language, for kids that don't want to learn language, the English language, so they start making up their own, the Ubonics and stuff like that, and everybody else is supposed to learn, and it divides. If everybody learned God's language, we'd be united. We'd understand each other. The golden rule is properly applied in everything. Therefore, treat others the same as you want them to treat you. Notice that's not where it stops. And thus fulfill the law and the prophets. That's the golden rule. Not just treating others the way you want to be treated. You treat them as you want God to treat you, according to the law and the prophets. Christians should look out for others' interests and not their own. We've been through that. Notice, here Romans, the 12th chapter. Just a small section of Romans 12, of the kind of society we're in, 9 through 13. Let love be without hypocrisy. Abhor what is evil, cling to that which is good. Be devoted to one another in brotherly love. Give preference for one another in honor, not lagging behind in diligence. Fervent in spirit, serving the Lord, rejoicing in hope, persevering in tribulation, devoted to prayer, contributing to the needs of the saints, practicing hospitality. Every society would be better off if these were their cardinal rules. God promises material blessings if we seek the important things first. His kingdom, his righteousness. He'll take care of everything else, just like he did with Israel. Other governments are honored and respected. I mean, we are a nation. We're the nation of God. We're the kingdom of God. And like any nation, you need to respect the rights of other nations. We may not agree with them, but as much as we can, we do. That's why Romans, much as within you, be at peace with all men. Okay. 10, it is a society of proper discipline by a loving father. God says he'll discipline us. Okay. Till we learn to discipline ourselves, he will discipline us, like any father. Energy and industry is expected of all, if they are able, where each bears his own burden, but if someone has a burden that's overbearing, we're to step in and help them. 2 Thessalonians 3, for you ought yourselves to know how you ought to follow our example, Paul tells the church of Thessalonica, because we did not act in an undisciplined manner among you, nor did we eat anyone's bread without paying for it, but with labor and hardship we kept working night and day so that we would not be a burden to any of you. This is the example he sets. This is not an entitlement society that God is putting together. This is where each person is very industrious. Look at it. Not because we do not have a right to this, but in order to offer ourselves as a model for you so that you will follow our example. Okay? It's not an example of a society where everybody is doing the minimum. It's where they're doing the maximum, just in case, so that they not only took care of themselves, but if anyone has a need, something comes up, others are there to help them out. That's where charity comes in. The reason socialism caught on under FDR is because they calmed the Catholic Church into saying, if we take money from other people and give it to other people, that's charity. And it's not. Charity is when it comes from your heart. You give it voluntarily, not when somebody takes it away from you and gives it to somebody else. That's called legal plunder. It's stealing. In fact, for even when we were with you, we used to give you this order, if anyone is not willing to work, then he is not to eat either. First colony of Jamestown, it was socialistic. You know, where some people work, some kind of slimed around, and they said, well, you know, we'll feed everybody. Well, they almost starved that first winter because people started to figure out, I'm going to get the food whether I work or not. Second year, they read this scripture to them. You don't work, you don't eat. You'd be surprised how wealthy they were the second year. Everybody doing their part. I mean, Jamestown went from being, you know, socialist to, you know, republic real quick. Vast freedoms come with Christian living, along with great blessings. Okay, notice in Galatians 5, it talks about the fruit of the Spirit. And so there's no law against this. There's no restriction. You can be as loving, as joyful, as peaceful, as patient, as kind, good, faithful, gentle, self-controlled as you want to be. No restrictions. There is a reward for labor, and charity is the responsibility of an individual, not some government that spreads, you know, seeks to spread the wealth. Notice in 1 Timothy 6, there was rich among the community. He says, just remember to share. Now, if God has made you wealthy as he did in the Old Testament, he made some of the patriarchs some of the wealthiest people on the planet. But he also, yeah, they were under his guidance and governance. And their heart was rich. When one knows the truth, John 8, so Jesus was saying to those Jews who had believed him, if you continue in my word, then you are truly disciples of mine. You will know the truth, and the truth will make you free. You want to be a free soul in this life? Know what God has to teach, and you'll know what your limitations are and where there are no limitations. The only real right one has to think about is their inheritance as heirs of God's kingdom. This is truly the only great society, the one you're sitting in right now. If all men follow God's principles, a lot of the money wouldn't go for atheism research and evolution. It wouldn't go to me making nuclear armaments. A vast amount of money, or the police departments or whatever. Everybody would be self-governing, and a vast amount of research and money would go for the good things of life, to better men's lives, to make them more rich, to make them more prosperous, you know, to give them the time to think about spiritual things. That's what God intended, to give you an enriched life. Paul ends up in the first chapter of Ephesians pretty much, I pray that the eyes of your heart may be enlightened so that you will know what is the hope of his calling, what are the riches of the glory of his inheritance in the saints, what is the surpassing greatness of his power toward us who believe. These are in accordance with the working of the strength of his might. I mean, what Paul's saying here is, you want a good life? God will help make you a better person and enrich everyone around you. and he will be behind your society. I mean, it's not a society that's sustained just because of some sort of philosophy. It's a society where, as you're working, God rolls up his sleeves and sits there and works right alongside of you. In fact, he'll do more work for it than you will. Look at the Old Testament. When they went into Canaan, yeah, they had to fight the enemy, but God killed more of them than the Israelites did. You want God working in your life. And this is the perfect example and model. I'll leave you with one last passage as we get out of here. One sort of touched on in class this morning, but again, just to emphasize something. In Hebrews 12, beginning of verse 18, and I encourage you to open your Bibles, read with me if you would. Well, the Hebrew writer says, in fact, he said, where are you now? Basically, he's answering that question. Where are you? I mean, even as you sit right here, where do you think you are? You've not come to a mountain that may be touched to a blazing fire, into darkness and gloom, in a whirlwind, into the blast of a trumpet, and the sound of words, which sound was such that those who heard begged that no further word be spoken to them. For they could not bear the commandment, if even a beast touched the mountain, they would be stoned. And so terrible was the sight that Moses said, I am full of fear and trembling. But you have come to Mount Zion. I mean, this is now. This is where you are. You don't see this, but it's real. You've come to Mount Zion, to the city of the living God, the heavenly Jerusalem, and to myriads of angels, to the general assembly and church of the firstborn who are enrolled in heaven, to God, the judge of all, and the spirits of righteous men made perfect, and to Jesus, the mediator of a new covenant, and to the sprinkled blood which speaks better than the blood of Abel. That's the society you're in right now. That's the group you're among. You may not see God sitting on Mount Zion, or the myriad host of angels around us, or the righteous that are enrolled, but they're very real as you are, sitting right there. The assembly you're in is a privilege. But you don't just come and sit in it. The heart has to be right to be there. You can be sitting in this assembly, and you cannot be in that assembly. Because only the saved are there. God added them to the church. This is the fulfillment of Jeremiah. I will write my laws on their heart. Is God's law written on your heart? If not, you're not in that assembly. It's not a right. It's a blessing. It's a privilege. It's an honor. And you need to take that away with you from this. It's the ultimate example and model for the kind of way we need to live in order to be together. And if you think you got a better way of doing it, you're in for a rude awakening. The invitation is extended. Won't you come as we stand to sing?